This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
Barker.
Counting the votes in Taiwan, the island China claims as its own, but whose independence the U.S. has long supported.
They've opened the ballot boxes, taking the ballot papers out and calling either the candidates or the party's name and then tallying it. On a board. It's been a very fast-moving process, actually, very quick.
The BBC's Shema Khalil, who says domestic questions like housing affordability and wealth inequality are the top concerns, primarily among Taiwan's young, while older Taiwanese continue to fear Chinese aggression. Early results show the ruling party candidates got a strong lead. The U.S. has hit more sites in Yemen linked to the Houthi rebels who've been attacking Western shipping in the Red Sea. Pentagon spokesman Major General Patrick Ryder.
We absolutely do not want to see extension of the conflict in Gaza broader into the region, and we'll continue to work hard on that. But at the same time, we can't allow the Houthis to continue to conduct these attacks, putting innocent mariners' lives at risk and affecting the global economy.
A blizzard is blanketing the Midwest, downing power lines, canceling flights, and potentially disrupting an opening chapter of the presidential campaign. Here's CBS forecaster David Parkinson.
It is going to be the coldest Iowa caucus on record, and it's not even close. The previous record coldest was back in 2004 when it was 16 degrees for a high. We'll probably only get to minus four. On Monday.
Iowans are made of tough stuff. Hope Kansas football fans are too, ahead of today's wild card playoff game between the Chiefs and the Dolphins. Forecaster Parkinson again.
That's probably going to be the coldest playoff football game potentially on record. Your high temperature for the day is 6 degrees. When you're kicking off, it's probably closer to 0 degrees, and your wind chill probably below negative 20.
Ooh, the Chiefs coach says his team is prepared.
KC coach Andy Reid.
Cold is cold, but you go do your thing, you go play. There's one thing you don't have to do, and that's to tell them to stand by the warmers.
Stand by the warmers. There will be a lot of that.
CBS's Steve Kathan. In Colorado, what was considered a relatively minor incident at the time turns out to have been anything but.
Authorities now say an early morning break-in at the Colorado Supreme Court building in downtown Denver January 2nd caused a shocking $35 million in damage. It left three floors of the building unusable. A 44-year-old man is accused of shooting his way into the building, threatening an unarmed security guard, and then starting a fire on the seventh floor of the courthouse before eventually surrendering to police. The man told police he was hallucinating at the time after smoking methamphetamine and taking fentanyl pills. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehoe. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The snow is coming down hard in most of Wisconsin, and it'll be 6 to 12 inches before it's all over. Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The target, the heaviest of the snow, is still tracking the same direction as the last one, headed in towards Richland Center, Madison, Beaver Dam, the Dells, even possibly up into the Fox Valley as well.
The snow in this storm is drier than Tuesday's, and wind gusts could exceed 50 miles per hour, qualifying as a blizzard. A Dane County judge has blocked an effort from legislative Republicans to remove the state's top election administrator. The judge ruled that Megan Wolf is able to stay in her position until the State Elections Commission names a new administrator. The judge also ruled that the commission has no obligation to find a new administrator. I'm Nate Wiggehoe, Civic Media News.
Packers Keyshawn Nixon named to the All-Pro team. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Packers defensive back Keyshawn Nixon is in his second year of returning kickoffs and once again has been named to the AP's All-Pro first team. Matt LaFleur.
What an honor for everybody, because he can't do that alone. There's a lot of guys that are, you know, blocking for him, doing what they do, and so it's a credit to that whole unit, and certainly he's an incredible talent.
Keyshawn Nixon asked, what does it mean to be named the best kickoff returner in the league for a second consecutive year?
I think it's big for me and my accomplishment, but it's kudos to everybody. It always starts with the return unit, but for me, my accomplishments, they tell me some stat, like the only people that ever go back-to-back was like Devin Hester and Cordell Patterson, so that's a hell of a group to be with.
The Packers take on the Cowboys in Dallas in the wild card playoffs Sunday. Has he ever returned one at AT&T Stadium?
I've never played in Dallas. It's going to be brand new for me.
That's the Packers kick returner, Keyshawn Nixon. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, snow and blowing snow. Winds continue to gust 30 to 35 out of the northwest. Temperatures fall throughout the day. Tonight, cloudy skies, single digits, wind chills down to 15 below zero. For Sunday, cloudy and cold, staying below zero with those wind chills.
Currently 26 degrees.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
News, talk, and sports.
Talk about your triple play.
Get this guy a jockstrap and a cookie.
1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. He's back, Johnny Lupinacci. He's back. Hey. We missed you, my friend.
Yeah, man. We had a little New Year's break, little hockey over in Seattle for the Winter Classic. It was good times to be had.
Had to explain to Anya what the Winter Classic was.
I had no idea.
Come on, it's Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, I had to tell her. It's like they play hockey in a football stadium, man. Actually, Pittsburgh Penguins were the first ones to do it, weren't they?
Against Buffalo, yep, up in Buffalo. It was up in New York, but Pittsburgh Penguins played the first Winter Classic, yep.
Yep. So there it was. So Johnny Lupinacci was there, and on his way back, a little too much weather got in the way of making him get back in time for the show, but he's back, and Anya's back there in the studio. Hey, jump on 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Gonna try something tonight. We always say Busted Pencils is the education show for my neighbor, for your neighbor, for that person across the street, trying to bring something to you to go, I have heard a lot about this. Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, you are an educated educator talking education. You came up in the ranks. You learned about this whole thing called plagiarism. Plagiarism's in the news right now. Who'd have ever thought that plagiarism would be in the New York Times? But it is. The president of Harvard stepped down based on the fact that technically she, in through some of her dissertation to get her doctorate and through some of her published works, it was shown that she plagiarized. I'm thinking, does my neighbor even know what that means? What does it mean to plagiarize? We've got a guest tonight. Before I introduce her, though, Joan, I'm going to think about this. Maybe the best way to remember this, depending on your age, but, you know, if you're a little bit in, you know, up there and in your 30s, something. I'm wondering, do you remember sitting down in 11th grade learning to write that first term paper or whatever it was, and you got the 3x5 note cards and you started learning how to read articles and take notes? And during that time, you got to either take notes or you took direct quotes. And then when you sat down to write, you had all those note cards down and you learned up and down that if you're going to use direct quotation, you got to use quotation marks, you got to cite it, because if you don't do that, that's plagiarism. That's against the law. You're a bad person. So I was thinking about that. Maybe that's the first memory, or maybe even some people's last memory of plagiarism, was doing that term paper sometime in high school. But we did note cards. But you knew that when you were taking notes and reading articles, that there was something about saying you had to give credit. That's kind of at the heart of the plagiarism. We got an expert, though. She is the senior program coordinator for the interdisciplinary writing flag requirement at the University of Texas, Austin. She works with faculty who teach writing intensive courses in 15 colleges and schools, enrolling over 30,000 students annually. Oh, my God. Can you imagine checking those term papers? 30,000. She's taught literature and rhetoric at the University of Hawaii, Hilo, St. Edward's University, and the University of Texas, Austin. Her non-academic writing also includes works at The Owl, McSweeney's, and she has her memoir, Smile at Strangers. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Dr. Susan Shorn. Susan, how was that?
That was okay. That was awesome. So glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, so we were here. We tried to do a lot of prep to get this and come through. That was my thought since you and I talked this afternoon about this. Is that a good way to potentially introduce plagiarism? Was those 3x5-inch note cards, taking notes, lining them up, and somewhere your English teacher saying, and you better make sure that you quote this the right way, because if not, oh, that would be plagiarism. And if you plagiarize, you fail.
I definitely have that memory, but I'm sure that dates me quite a bit. I'm curious if Johnny has the same memory or if he might be of a more recent vintage on his plagiarism instruction.
I'm maybe right on the cusp of it being that. I think I'm like pre all the turnitin.com stuff. Yeah, I learned to write that way. You know, it was Elements of Style and an APA manual and a Chicago and an MLA. And it was like, depending on which college course you had, you know, those were the rules, but they stayed pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Anyone I was ideas cited, just yeah. Name the people the ideas came from, and anything that used direct words, like the same words from another page, you know, put that in parentheses and quote that directly. And yeah. Yep. And I don't know, it was hammered pretty hard at all levels of education.
Yeah. And I remember that being a jump from high school where they literally had the note cards. And then by the time I got into college and was writing longer papers, you could Xerox things. You could go to the library and just Xerox stuff. So then it was like, well, why am I going to write this down on a note card when I can just Xerox the whole article and just like underline the parts? That why do I have to copy it all over again? But I can't even imagine if I'd been doing that like the kids now. Everything's online and they can just copy and paste it, and trying to keep track of that is it's got to be a nightmare, you know, because how are you gonna, you got to remember what you took from where, and there's systems for it, but it's just so easy to introduce error. So it's a complicated task, and I appreciate the high school teachers who really tried to sort of scare us into a certain sort of compliance when we were young, but it really isn't that easy, and the further you go beyond high school, the more complicated it gets.
Well, Susan, that's what we talked about, because she was the president of Harvard University, and we're not disputing, let's put that right out there right now, that what Claudine Gay did through her dissertation and through some of her academic works met the bar of the technicality of plagiarism. It was there. Help us, though, understand. So we say copying note cards. You had a great little YouTube video you shared with me. What's the definition of plagiarism?
Oh, that's such a great question. So the one that I like to share with people is one I found it this time. I found it at Texas A&M on their website about academic honesty. And it's plagiarism means the appropriation of another person's ideas, processes, results, or words without giving appropriate credit. Which seems makes sense, right? Seems pretty easy to understand. And it's such a tidy, complete definition that, in fact, you will find it all over the internet. You can find it at Caltech, University of South Carolina, Oregon State, Northwestern, Penn State, Brown. They all use this same definition and nobody cites it. They use the exact same one. And the reason that they're using it is it ultimately comes from the National Science Foundation. That's the NSF's definition. And so, of course, if you're a research university who wants to get NSF funding, you want to make darn sure that everybody at your school is abiding by the NSF definitions for plagiarism and they understand it. So you're going to use it. But that doesn't explain why they don't cite it, right? It's like the definition says you have to cite it, but then they don't cite it. And nobody's calling that plagiarism. Nobody is reporting these schools to the NSF and saying, hey, they plagiarized your plagiarism statement. You need to take their funding away. That's not considered plagiarism, even though, like the phrase that you use, it meets the bar, right? Yeah. If you take a literal definition, you can say that it meets the bar. When you look at what Claudine Gay did in the elements that were brought up in media scrutiny, she did some things that were a little different. She more often was taking, she was looked like she was paraphrasing from specific authors, but she would leave in sections that were too much verbatim text, exactly the same words. And so that's something that happens really often too when you are engaged in an academic. So you're both academics and you write an academic paper and you're citing sources from within your field. You know, you want to bring in this theorist and this person who did this study. And if you think about what that feels like in your head when you're doing it, the cognitive psychologist would say it is incredibly cognitively taxing to have all these voices in your head. And it's kind of like you're trying to put on a little puppet show in your head as you're thinking through this. So Marx says, blah, 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 and then Engels over here says, blah, blah, blah. But I'm saying you're trying to control all these voices. And when you are paraphrasing and directly quoting and trying to mix that and fit it in with your own ideas, it's very easy to have that kind of slippage. So what she did is super, super common. Now, but that's why we have a dissertation committee that's supposed to be checking it.
Yeah, and we'll talk that. But I like what you just said, though, there. And anybody who has multiple voices in your head, we're not picking on you. But that idea, though, what you just said is because I'm imagining now when I'm doing my academic writing that I'm like Lupinacci said, Shorn said, so-and-so said. Mm-hmm. And because the three of those people said, I now think blank. And is it okay for me to go, because I understand what the three of these authors said, can I make my own determination of how I think it makes me feel about what I can say? And can I do that without saying Lupinacci and Susan were the people that gave me the inspiration to write my own thought?
Right. And that's always the struggle for any academic writer, is knowing when you have an independent thought, when you need to cite the people that helped you come up with that idea, because an academic field is an ongoing conversation, right? You're always jumping into some conversation at the party and you've got to get up to speed and you've got to include everybody and you've got to account for everything. So it's a very, very active sort of situation to put yourself in the middle of. And that's why especially with students, you know, high school students, like we keep it really limited. You know, you're supposed to use four sources and you're supposed to quote everybody. And we try to keep them out of trouble. But as you move further along, it gets more complicated.
Well, I think about it. So Johnny Lupinacci, are we making sense now? You think if you're my neighbor, this whole idea, I just heard on the news that the past president of Harvard had to step down because she was stealing people's ideas. We're trying to break, you know, I know we're coming up on the break, but I just want, you know, does this make sense?
Well, I think what's important is we got a good definition of what it means to plagiarize. And then there's gray area. And that's not saying it's okay to plagiarize a little, but not, you know, I mean, but there is like grades of this. And I think right now, at least even as myself, as a, you know, an author and editor, and, you know, and work in scholarly writing, it's a pretty big accusation to make the accusation and provide proof of plagiarism. And there is, because of that gray area, I think in this case with, you know, the most recent past president of Harvard was the gray area was really used and abused in order to launch an attack on an academic. Now that said, there's some, I mean, as an editor and as a writer, like I'm like, oh, this is also why we want our stuff air tight.
We want it tight, and we're gonna keep it tight. Busted, yeah. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, more plagiarism when we get back.
News, talk, and sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
There are 1,000 ways to say it.
Nope. Knock it off. Shut it down. Dream on. No dice. Give it a rest. Not a chance.
Or just
all text. You focus on the road.
As a passenger, you have the power to prevent an accident. There are 1,000 ways to stop a distracted driver. Choose one.
A message from CTIA.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, lost of who you thought you is.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You're listening to News, Talk, and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. The number is 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. If you have a good definition of plagiarism, give us a call, share it with us, because we want to know, were you one of those people like me and Susan, where you were taking and remembering taking 3x5-inch note cards, writing notes down, lining them up, putting together, almost looking like some kind of like weird conspiracy theory, putting strings together, making connections there, and then weaving together a story and hoping to goodness that your English teacher didn't say, "You aren't allowed to do that. You should have used direct quotation marks." That's what we're talking about, plagiarism. The past president, the most recent past president, she resigned. Claudine Gay stepped down amidst charges of academic plagiarism, of which were, and we said with our expert, Susan, she did. Susan, she plagiarized. Johnny was talking about a little bit in the gray. How... when you and I were talking this afternoon, getting ready for this, I think this is also worth talking about. We mentioned this. We're going to go after, like, so why did this happen? Why did they go after plagiarism? But before we get there, is to think about, how is it that somebody who's the president of Harvard or even like that, like, I don't think people understand what it means to do academic writing necessarily, right? Because there is a process, and you made mention to this. So to get those letters PhD attached to your name, EDD, all those ways, there's a group of other people who kind of say, yeah, you did it, or yeah, you didn't do it. And when we say talk about you did it, that's writing that big long-term paper, the one you had to write in 11th grade. When you're writing it to be Dr. So-and-so, you write it like 3 times the size, 5 times the size. But there's a group of people who are supposed to be kind of checking on you and saying you're doing okay. What happened here? How did her dissertation, because according to the what we saw, Claudine Gay plagiarized technically some of her dissertation. Shouldn't the dissertation kind of members who were saying you did, shouldn't they have some responsibility in this?
I think they do. I haven't seen any comment from them or anybody who has sought comment from them. I believe her committee was 3 people, and I think 2 of them were white men. So maybe that's one reason nobody's questioning their judgment on this. Not sure. But they should have read it closely. They probably should have caught some of this, especially the sections where there were citations at the end of a paragraph. But I think some of what was going on too is what we see with when, as you move forward in a discipline and you become higher status and higher rank, you actually have access to more of what's considered common knowledge. So you cite less. So an undergraduate, for example, who's writing about cellular biology is going to cite laboratory process descriptions about like how potassium moves across a cell membrane. Whereas if you're a neuroscientist writing for a journal, you're not going to cite that information because everybody you're writing for knows that. And it would look weird if you cited that. You would look like you thought that everybody else was kind of stupid. So as you're advancing in academia, you let go of some of your citation and you use more of what's out there as common knowledge. And that's one reason that plagiarism is so easily weaponized against people from marginalized communities, because unlike grammar standards, which tend to get applied at the first bar, like if you use a double negative, you're not going to even get a job interview. But if you are plagiarizing, the charge tends to be against people who have been, someone considers that they've gotten above their station, that they are overconfident in the amount of status that they had, that they took words and ideas from people or considered something common knowledge that a lot of other people also consider common knowledge. But because this person's somebody that we don't want to see with that much status, we're going to go after them. So it gets weaponized in that particular way.
Lupinacci, Johnny, I saw you kind of going like, yeah, cell membranes. Wait a minute. But as a neuroscientist, I'm not going to talk about that. Made me think, Johnny, it's like, so do you cite Piaget anymore?
I mean, I never cite Piaget. that's my own beef with that work. I mean, if I was writing, I think this is a tough thing. And I think it does. I mean, it opens up a lot of can of worms. I think, you know, there's a whole lot of conversations to be had about what is the role of a dissertation committee and what is the role of universities in terms in general. Like some universities have a system of checks and balances that are beyond the committee. The committee is focused on content and everything and might miss things, but then they have a whole office of like editor support and that runs through dissertations to help make sure of this. You know, and it's the same thing at journals, and editors deal with this all the time in terms of, you know, how much as you read more of this work, you begin to notice when there's not proper citation. Like it really stands out. And I say that having worked in writing pre-Turnitin.com and automated detections of plagiarism, and I put scare quotes up for our radio listeners here. You know, if you're not watching on the video feed, I mean, I think there are ways where we can find word associations that trigger or alarm what we might be able to call low or mid-grade plagiarism. And you have to really read carefully and see, did the person maybe in that paragraph introduce, say, like the author had said this, and this, and then said the, and so it might oftentimes be like light detection of plagiarism that isn't really like this blatant, like I'm stealing ideas and pretending they're my own, or I'm putting something forward that aren't words I put together, but they're lifted from other people's, you know, books or articles or pieces of work. So I think there's like layers of this that we turn into like a point the finger who's blaming. I even told you, Tim, about this. I'm excited for us to talk about this because I love when there's tension and controversy around something that helps us think critically about where we're at with stuff. And right. I think accusing people of plagiarism is like about, you know, like par for the course, if I might say, for how can we attack and you know, Dr. Shorn shared this here, people who we don't think should have authority in what they're sharing. And, you know, the big thing for me was looking at this case more closely, and I don't have access to all the evidence. I didn't dig deep enough. I'm sure it's public record out there. But what I did see is people say, hey, you know what? I don't feel like this person in any way stole my ideas. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like this person in any way purported what I was putting out there in some advantage that disadvantaged me and advantaged them. And so, you know, I think that's a big piece of it, is there is enough gray area that we can point fingers and throw darts at one another really and really close proximity. And to me, that's kind of what's happening here, is it's a person who we don't, for a particular group, don't want to accept their power and authority. And so there's just enough area for us to create havoc around it to do harm. Yeah. And it's going to, and this is my prediction, it's going to cause a whole lot of mess.
It's a big mess that's coming. We know that. We know so much is coming. You know, we're gonna even throw this in there coming up on this next break here, but you know, did racism have anything to do with this plagiarism? Our guest is Dr. Susan Shorn, senior program coordinator at the University of Texas Austin. We are talking plagiarism for my next door neighbor. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Call us next break or next time, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. We want to hear your definition of plagiarism. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, back after the break.
This is News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
CBS News brief. After both opposition candidates concede, the ruling party candidate wins Taiwan's election.
Numbers were so, so close. But now that we've had these concession speeches, now that we've seen the numbers of William Lai of the DPP, it's been moving very fast in the last half hour. People have been really, really lifted. The mood has just changed.
BBC's Shema Khalil in Taipei. The U.S. has hit more Houthi rebel bases in Yemen, payback for Houthi attacks on Western shipping in the Red Sea. And 2 days to go before the Iowa Republican caucus, CBS's Ed O'Keefe is there.
With fresh data showing inflation creeped up last month, the voters are most concerned with rising prices.
I'm in shock. I just told my husband the other day, do you know how much that orange juice cost? I mean, I am seeing it, and I'm not liking it.
Caucusing may be hampered by a massive winter storm that's blanketed the region with snow and ice, with frostbite warnings out in Iowa. CBS News Brief, I'm Vicki Barker.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Keeping the power on is one of the biggest challenges in a big winter storm. 23,000 homes and businesses in Wisconsin lost their electricity at one point Friday morning. The hardest hit area was Milwaukee County. Wisconsin lawmakers will likely take up tax cuts again. The Wisconsin Policy Forum says it would be hard to cut taxes without also cutting public services. Democrats say they'll prioritize working families.
People do want to have the services that are going to allow them and their families to live a good life in their communities. And they also want to feel like their tax burden is fair, right? And they see the benefit of that. So we try to balance all of those things.
Assembly Democratic Minority Leader Greta Neubauer speaking with Wisconsin Eye. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Snow accumulations will be light at first.
When you need to know what to expect from the weather,
widespread throughout the southern half of the state, we're looking at 5 to 8 inches.
You can count on the Civic Media team of meteorologists led by Brittany Merlot to track the snow and the impact.
This will be a heavy, wet, slushy, sloppy snowfall that'll be heavy to shovel.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
WRJN.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, snow and blowing snow. Winds continue to gust 30 to 35 out of the northwest. Temperatures fall throughout the day. Tonight, cloudy skies, single digits, wind chills down to 15 below zero. For Sunday, cloudy and cold, staying below zero with those wind chills.
Currently 26 degrees.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. News, talk, and sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
What's your go-to when the cold winds of winter blow? A heavy coat? A hat? For many of us, it's lip stuff, too. But did you know one of the most popular brands, Carmex, the one in the little yellow tube or tub, is a Wisconsin product? It's made in Franklin, a suburb of Milwaukee, and it's shipped to more than 60 countries every year. So can you guess the original use for Carmex? Fixing squeaky doors, actual lip balm, or to soften baseball gloves? The answer coming up. Alfred Woolwing created Carmex in the kitchen of his Dodge County home in Rubicon in 1937. He hand-poured thousands of jars until deciding to automate the manufacturing process in the 70s. Now, can you guess the original use for Carmex when it was created? Created more than 80 years ago. It's always been meant to be a lip balm, but people use it on other dry or itchy skin areas too. It remains a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
On air, online, and on the Civic Media app.
Battle stations, everybody. Let's go. Go.
This
go, go, go,
is 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
That's what we do every week here. We give it all. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Our guest, Dr. Susan Shorn, University of Texas, Austin, plagiarism expert. Yes, there are plagiarism experts out there. We're talking about this. Got some callers on the line before we jump into the next segment. We're talking about racism. First, though, L.A. Tom, you're out there. We're thinking about L.A. Tom. What do you think plagiarism is?
Well, first off, we the people collectively ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. I think honestly that we need to have more people when they make comments, or first off, I think people that are calling people plagiarists are probably the plagiarists themselves. Because I feel like they're the ones that actually are the ones that are plagiarizing or trying to figure out, because they know these sneaky ways of being able to accuse other people of the things that they do, projection to the max. Second, I would love to see more people that when they are on radio or when they call in as callers, actually cite their sources of where it is that they're actually giving their talking points. That I am more concerned about than if somebody repeated something that someone said, because or write something that someone else said, because if it's the truth, then there's not a problem. But if it's an unfactual thing, that's where I have a problem with it. And I hear it all day long on Right Wing Hate Radio, where people just say whatever comes out of their mouth, and they don't back it up with a source of where they got it. It's usually Fox, or it's usually somewhere like that, but they need to actually source their material that they're saying. And I think the same goes for Twitter and other organizations, so we can actually see if the source that's actually coming from is actually someone that we can look at as a reliable source, rather than just, you know, their neighbor down the street or an email that they got off the, you know, off spam.
L.A. So, Tom, come on. My uncle at Thanksgiving dinner is a wealth of knowledge. And when he says vaccines cause COVID, come on. I need to really source that beyond that. L.A. Tom, we always love your call. We got Joanne Madison. Joanne, academic plagiarism. What do you think?
Okay, I just wrote an article a few years ago in the Review of Higher Education on the dark side of academics, which went through a lot of these issues. It's plagiarism. It's knowingly accepting credit for another person's academic or intellectual effort. And what we have are many modes for doing this. You could put your name on an article, you know, and be a co-author on an article you haven't even looked at or read. This is a very common practice in higher education. We are documenting it in the article that I wrote. A royal we there. I was documenting it in the article I wrote. But there's something even more pernicious, and I think it might have something to do with Dr. Gay's problem. These dissertation advisors, I'll be really quick about this. These dissertation advisors often put their own writing in their subjects' dissertations. I have seen this personally, many times, where the dissertation advisors will say, I can't submit this. I got to help this person out. And that person adds material, or that person, you know, cuts a few corners and all that to get the product out. And the advisee doesn't say, hey, get that material out of there. You know, I can't have you do this. Just accept opposite. And I'm guessing that that might have happened with Dr. Gay's work. It's happened with a number of other people. In fact, Dr. Martin Luther King was condemned for being a plagiarist at one point, and it was most probably his advisor who had put those extra sections in the material that he was submitting for his dissertation. So again, lots of issues. It's a complex topic, and you've got an incredible source there. So I thank you very much for bringing such an amazing speaker for your program.
Well, thank you, Joanne. We love when you call all the time. LA Tom, Joanne. So Susan, feedback on our callers there?
Yeah, I was really when LA Tom mentioned that he would like people to source their information more. That was really heartening to hear, because I think a lot of people have kind of moved away from wanting to do that. Tim, you and I had talked earlier about why citation is important. If somebody says George Washington said something, is that common knowledge? And then we talked about the problem of quotes from George Washington that are bandied about online that don't even exist. And after that conversation, I figured out that the Mount Vernon Museum of George Washington's birthplace has an entire page on their website dedicated to spurious George Washington quote. It's so popular for people to make up stuff for George Washington to have said. So I think L.A. Tom was pointing out how this just contributes to an atmosphere of misinformation and bad information. Of course, that's what citation in the academy is intended to work against, is that we have a good factual-based knowledge-based to work from. And Joanne, I will have to look for your book. I'm so glad to hear about that. And yeah, it is a very complicated, complex topic. Johnny, you called it a can of worms. And I think one problem that I have with the sort of media circus about this, I have a lot of problems with it, but it is kind of a can of worms, but it is a can of worms that really, it's not anything that academics normally are trying to hide. We negotiate and navigate these kinds of things. Every paragraph that we write, everything that we publish, every time we send something for peer review, we get together with a reading group. We're always going back through our own stuff and saying, do I need to bring in more voices? Have I done this right? And it's not even just because we don't want to get into trouble. It's because we want all those voices in our scholarship, because that's how you build a knowledge base that's useful moving forward. That's what academia is about. So what has been really disturbing to me about last couple of weeks is the kind of language that was used around this controversy that was not, you know, not the language necessarily of academia. We had this very dry discussion about where are the quotation marks and where are the parentheses. But, you know, Chris Rufo was out there talking about using terms like scalping. He was talking about these images of decay. We're going to expose the rot. And these are all the kinds of tactics that are associated with kind of fascist ideologies. And I'm not a historian, but I'm a big fan of George Moss, who was a historian of fascism. And he referred to fascism as a scavenger doctrine. It goes around and it picks up all these ideologies, any ideology that can be useful to the project of consolidating power, fascism will sweep up and use. And here, plagiarism is one of those things that this academic concern with voices is being weaponized against a woman of color who got into a position of power on her merits, and to remove her from that position. When, you know, if you look at somebody in a different field who's gonna have a ghostwriter for them, if your neighbor, Tim, has ever written to their congressman with a question or a problem and gotten a letter back that was signed by their congressman, hate to tell you this, but the congressman probably didn't write that letter. They didn't sit at their word processor and type all that out. So these are kind of really hypocritical claims, and they're being used sort of piecemeal. And the sad thing is that plagiarism is really important, and academic honesty is really important to building these critical knowledge bases. If you think about that can of worms, you know, if you've ever raised chickens and you've seen chickens fight over something, a worm or a caterpillar or some corn that you throw down, and it's just this big sort of cluster of wings and clucking noises and feet going everywhere. And that's kind of what I saw going on over the last couple of weeks, because the bigger project here is really about making academia look like a freak show, making it look like a joke. And so I would just encourage people to think about when you are seeing purported conversations about higher academia that look like a chicken fight, that just know that that is probably not really a fight about any kind of scholarly project, because chickens don't cure cancer, right? Chickens don't write plays or paint masterpieces or come up with explanations for why we have gone through the historical epics that we have. Chickens just fight over small scraps of stuff. So when you see that going on, you can be pretty confident that the fight is really about something else.
Well, I would say, but in this, yeah, the something else though too. And this is where, you know, did Dr. Gay plagiarize? Yes. Was she attacked? And was the attack racist? Yes. Yes, it was. You know, and she came out and said, look, I'm being attacked by this is racism. And people are like, it has nothing to do with racism. We were just calling you out on the fact that you weren't using your merits, and that because you used your marginalized condition to get into a place of power that would typically be held for us. And we're just calling out the fact we're not racist. It's like, no, Rufo, you are. You are okay. Just own it. A trip, take. You know,
These two things can be simultaneously happening. Yes. At the same time.
Right.
This is the thing. This is again where, like Susan brought up, like if you see chicken fight around can of worms, it's likely intentional.
Yeah.
To be able to back out and be like, well, it's not that. Wait, these two things can happen at the same time.
Yeah. Has Chris Russo ever claimed not to be racist though? Because that's not how I understand. Exactly. The New York Times, in my opinion deserves much more opprobrium, because Chris Rufo pretty much does what he says on the tin, right? But the New York Times is supposed to be the paper record, and everybody there deserves a spanking, I think.
Yeah.
Well, you look at that, and then but now, you know, one of the other instigators there too, though, within this is a billionaire, Bill Ackman, coming out there. And we got to touch on this, because, you know, he's really putting in a lot of money to go after, quote, people in positions of power who he doesn't believe should be in power. And lo and behold, his wife, who happened to be an academic at MIT, she's left there now. But it was found out by Business Insider that his wife plagiarized in the same style and tone as Claudine Gay.
Worse.
And now, though, Ackman, and this is, you know, really, you want to talk about a can of worms or a can of whoop, you know, whatever. He is now taking his billions and saying he is going to expose everybody at MIT, every faculty member, every president. And then when he's done with MIT, he's going to take on all of higher education and explode the, as you say, the riffraff of all of us in there out there, because us in higher education, we're just a bunch of plagiarists, and we're stealing the power, and we're indoctrinating students. And thank goodness for Bill Ackman and Chris Rufo to finally come to America's saving graces. How in the world did we go from stealing my 3x5 note cards to taking down the American higher education system because you're a billionaire and you're mad that somebody said, hey, your wife does it too?
I give him a week before he gets bored and gives up, frankly, because he's going to uncover a lot more of this stuff. And at some point, people are going to say, look, everybody does this. Somebody's going to look at his hedge fund reports that have come out. They're going to find the boilerplate in that. And it's common practice. It's not a secret. So, I mean, I think he's very excited about it right now. I think he kind of got really energized by Chris Rufo's project, and he feels like he had a big success. I think his wife's probably kind of mad at him at this point. Sounded like they weren't having a great week on social media. So we'll see what really happens. But, you know, if somebody's really going to, if he's actually going to sit down and read all of that work and have people read that work, that's probably more than all those dissertations have been read, right? Because dissertations get published, nobody reads them. So I think that's great. It'll be exposure for a lot of.
Yeah, it's going to bump everybody's citations and.
I'm like, hey, Bill Ackman, right now, 1999, Slecker University of Maryland. Check it out, man. Put it out there and put it out, because that will be the first time anybody other than the five people that had to read it, of which I'm not sure even they read all of it. Well, anybody else will have read it. I don't know, you know. It's out there. Susan Shorn, Senior Program Coordinator. Susan, YouTube video, you said something about McSweeney's. Where should we find you? You're an expert in plagiarism. Promote.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I don't, like I'm an expert in plagiarism because that's what was in my inbox when I came back from the holidays. Just like last year, I was an expert in ChatGPT because that was what was there, and everybody at my institution was freaking out about it. So you can learn more about the writing program at UT on the University of Texas at Austin website. I have a website, susanshorn.com, but it's more concerned with my advocacy and self-defense work. I also teach self-defense. I do a lot of work on de-escalation training, things like that. So people can look there. That video is online. If you search for my name, Susan Schorn, S-C-H-O-R-N, you'll find this about an 18-minute video that I talk a little bit more about research into plagiarism.
Awesome. Who knew? Who knew plagiarism could be so interesting? Our guest, Dr. Susan Schorn, Johnny Lupinacci, and Tim Slecker. When we get back, we're going to break it down more when we get back.
You're listening to News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
You hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15 with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The Foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
This is News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh, it is the undertow. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. 844-967-2789. We just had a great guest, Dr. Susan Schorn, University of Texas, Austin, talking about plagiarism. Who knew plagiarism was so interesting? Well, we did. That's why we brought it to you. That's what we do here on Busted Pencils. You know, we want you to think a little bit, my neighbor. Yeah, when's the last time you thought about those 3x5-inch note cards? And you know, how many people out there still have those note cards somewhere in an attic where you want to show did? Hey, you know, I mean, some people like to keep all that old school stuff. Johnny, so, okay. You said, though, too, we were getting at this point. It's like, you know, can the people who attacked and went after Claudine Gay be engaging in racist tactics by going after her? And you're like, well, yeah, you know, sorry. It may be that she, quote, did plagiarize, but your attack of her is racistly motivated. But, you know, the other part is going, so why, what, how did Dr. Gay's academic work take such a spotlight? And this is just to go back and remember, the presidents of, was it Penn and Stanford and Harvard, got pulled in front of the Republican, all of Congress, and got asked that question of going, so if somebody called for the genocide of Jews on your campus, would that amount to some type of behavior that could be punished? And Dr. Gay said, well, it depends. And boy, she got nailed for saying, what do you mean somebody calling for the genocide of somebody else? It depends. Isn't that enough to call for that? Anya, you had some thoughts there, though.
Yeah, it's tough to try to get through all the malaise that I think the Republicans have thrown in front of this. I want to be clear. I think the most vocal reactions to Dr. Gay and her plagiarism, accused plagiarism, is racist and is a response by the right to discredit someone. I do, as a Jewish person, still find what she said to be wrong. And I think so many young people, I'll equate it to when I was a university student, a fellow student enrolled at the same school as me, brought a sign to a Jewish event that said, gas the Jews. It was in a kind of code. But I feel deeply for the Jews who are students on campus right now, because back at that time, I was really afraid for my physical safety. Mm. I know that other students are feeling that. And to hear the president of your university say, well, your death threats, they have to have a certain context. It's like, well, that hurts. And also, I am scared and I'm trying to finish school. And I'm so I want to separate myself out very clearly as not a Republican, as someone who is white and is unlearning the racism that I was brought up with, as all white people are, period. And also new sentence. I think the particular comments by Dr. Gay about anti-Semitism on campus sucked. And I think Harvard needs to work on that. And I think it'd be cool if that was where the conversation was instead of this supposed, I don't know, plagiarism. Let's talk about the not supposed, the very real, the provably real hatred towards many different types of students on campus. Not limited to, but certainly I have to speak for them because they are of my people, the Jewish students on campus right now. So that's how I'll wrap it up. Hopefully that doesn't come out of, you know, left field or like sounding like these other Republicans who are using this as an excuse to kick sand in somebody's face. You know, that is what we're seeing so much of is I'm only on this side because I hate the other side. It's like, well, we don't want you here if that's how you're going to behave. We don't want you yelling at Dr. Gay because you're mad at her because of her skin tone. What's wrong with you? We want you to be upset because the content of that remark was wrong. At least I feel it was wrong, and that's why I'm upset with her. There we go.
Yeah, and those things can coexist, right? Like, you laid it out really well, Anya, and appreciate it always. And that's part of the sentiment here, is like, why it is a distraction and a whole big explosion of noise that obscures from the necessary conversation around how do we have safe and healthy learning spaces that include difference and dialogue. It shuts it all down and obscures it, because there should very much be a dialogue between all campus leaders, not just prestigious Ivy League or like big, well-known schools. But what does it mean to be a leader of a campus in a moment where we have really loose and dangerous ideas about what free speech means, and what freedom means, and how we like really build, you know, community in the midst of a complete erosion around what it means to have, you know, freedom in these spaces. And so I think, you know, how if we were in a generative conversation with that, I do wholly believe that that, you know, the post president of Harvard would be in a position to model and acknowledge we need to do better by all of our students, and how can we get there, and we can have that conversation. Instead, what we know is it's sent a message from those on that sort of scavenging ideology that says, if you even engage in letting your voice be out there, then we're coming for you. And it's like violence on top of violence, and it's not generative, and we got to move past it. You know, Tim, the last thing I'll kind of wrap us up with is, you know, it's football season for a lot of our listeners, and I think Wisconsin folks are headed to the playoffs. So congratulations, Wisconsin fans and Packer backers out there. You go.
Dude, what about the Steelers?
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Steelers are probably the worst team going to the playoffs. But, hey, the part I'll come back to is, this is a lot like, for us football fans, this is a lot like, this plagiarism thing is a lot like how refs can call a hold on nearly every single play. Which ones are they going to call, and when are they going to call them? And that's the role we're in this whole plagiarism game. I wish we were having the conversation Anya brought up and not did or did she not plagiarize.
We got next week, right?
We got next week. That's what we do. Busted Pencils every week. Thank you. We will see you next week.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils, or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
talk and the sports that made Wisconsin great. Packers, Bucks, and coming in 2024, the Brewers. 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Say it with me, the Bucks in six. And you could catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on WRJN 1400 AM 99.9 FM in Racine, your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
WRJN, your home for the Packers. 1400 AM WRJN Racine, 99.9 FM W260CV Racine, and 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.